Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, a preview of Pope Benedict's visit to his native Germany later this month. We ask, what impact can he make on the search for reconciliation and unity between Catholics and Lutherans? And the spirit of Assisi. We look ahead to the 25th anniversary in October of the first World Day of Prayer for Peace in the Umbrian hill town dedicated to St. Francis. Later this month, Pope Benedict sets out on a visit to his native Germany, hoping to kindle a renewed interest in the faith in an increasingly secular nation. Under the theme, Where God Is, the Future Is, the four-day trip begins on September the 22nd and will take him to the once-divided capital, Berlin, as well as to Erfurt, Etzelbach and Freiburg for meetings with the country's civic and religious leaders. High on the Pope's agenda will be meetings with Jewish and Muslim representatives in Germany, as well as with leaders of Germany's Protestant churches. Among those watching this visit closely will be Lutheran pastor Theodor Dieter, director of the Institute for Ecumenical Research in Strasbourg, France. I contacted him to find out more about Catholic-Lutheran relations in Germany and about his expectations for this forthcoming papal trip. Professor Dieter, can you tell us something about the overall religious picture in your country? Germany is about evenly divided, isn't it, between Catholics and Protestants?
Yes, there is nearly the same amount of Protestants and Catholics, and that means that there are very many mixed marriages, though the challenge for ecumenism is an everyday challenge. And in many parishes, Catholic and priests and Protestant pastors work very well together. Now, of course, we also see some challenges in Germany. The lack of priests in the Catholic Church leads to a situation where many priests are overworked, and it is very difficult often for them to find time for ecumenical events, for ecumenical services, because ecumenical services are all this extra work. And so sometimes it is difficult, but on the whole, I think there are so many cooperations on many different levels that ecumenism is an everyday reality in Germany.
And so it remains quite a high priority, would you say, within both churches there?
Yeah, I would say, and this is also the case because for the perception of the general public, there is no clear distinction between the Protestant and the Catholic Church. So that means if there are problems in the Catholic Church, like the misuse of children by some priests, this also affected the Protestant churches. And I think also the other way around. So it is clear that in order to get a good perception and to get good working possibilities in society, the churches are simply forced to work together because many people would not and do not understand that the churches are in many conflicts with each other. And the churches, I think the responsible people in the churches see this. Not all of them have realized this in a full way, I think, on both sides, but many see it. And so they see that they can only win together or lose together, but they cannot win in opposition to each other.
You mentioned the sex abuse scandals and the numbers, of course, of Catholics who have been leaving the church. Is the Protestant church or are the Protestant churches facing similar problems of declining numbers at the moment?
Yes, of course. But the main problem for, I think, for all churches is the demographic change, though that unfortunately there are not so many children who are born in Germany, and that means that by the change of the population, the number of people who belong to the church is decreasing, and it will decrease. And this is the strongest factor for the lack of people, or the fact that churches lose members. Many of them, of also leave because they are unsatisfied or have lost the relation to the church and to God. But the demographic factor is a very strong element in Germany.
Are there many Catholics and Lutherans changing, converting to the other church, if you like, or is this not very much a common phenomenon?
This doesn't happen very often in Germany. It's very different from the United States, for example. Now, with reference to the sexual abuse problems, quite a number of Catholics left the Catholic Church and joined a Protestant church. But I think this is a singular event, and it doesn't happen very often that Protestants convert to the Catholic Church or the other way around.
Pope Benedict is visiting Erfurt, isn't he, where Luther lived and studied. He's also going to Freiburg, more of a Catholic heartland, and then, of course, the city of Berlin. What kind of reception do you think he will receive in these very different cities?
Well, of course, I think in Erfurt, I expect that he is very warmly welcome. People, irrespective whether they are Catholics or Protestants, feel honored by his visit, and they see that it was the special wish of the Pope to have more time to meet Protestant responsible persons in Erfurt. And I think this is clearly seen that he wants also to have an ecumenical emphasis for his visit. So I think the visit in Erfurt will be very well received. Berlin is a very different situation. I could expect that the reception there is a little bit cooler or not so warm. But even if there may be some protesters, I think on the whole he will be received and welcomed very, very warmly.
You're talking about the importance of the meeting with Lutheran leaders. What impact, what real impact do you think this kind of visit and this kind of meeting can have? There are those who say that although it's a very high-profile meeting, in concrete terms, it's little more than perhaps a photo opportunity for the two churches.
Yeah, well, this is always the problem with such visits, that they are planned so carefully in advance that for personal encounter, there is not much space left. But I think it will depend very much on the words that the Pope will find in Erfurt, whether he can include the Protestants in what he says without trying to dominate them. So it is a delicate task for him, but I'm convinced that he will find good words in Erfurt to cope with this not easy situation.
The Lutheran world is, of course, already looking forward to 2017, the 500th anniversary of the beginnings of the Reformation. Do you think this will feature quite largely on the agenda during this visit?
No, I don't think. This is such a difficult and a complex question that I cannot imagine that this will play a big role. In the International Catholic Lutheran Commission, we are working to write a text on how to commemorate 2017, 500 years of Reformation. But we have learned that this question has so many aspects that I cannot expect that the Pope will say very much about this question. I guess that he will say some more general words, and they may be very important for the future of the relations and also how Catholics and Protestants approach 2017. But I don't think that he can go into details and bring the question really very much further. He can outline some general views, but I don't think he can do more.
The Pope is, of course, addressing Catholics right across United Germany. Can you tell us something about the situation in former East Germany, the ecumenical picture there?
Well, I think as long as the German Democratic Republic existed, there were very good relations between Protestants and Catholics, at least between those who were close to their churches. They were in a similar situation of marginalization and oppression, and so they were very open for cooperation. now many things changed, and I think the relations are a little bit less intense than they were before, but I think still there are many good experiences from the past left, and new experiences are added to these old good experiences, so that I think the ecumenical climate in Eastern Germany is, according to my perception, quite good.
What would be your message for the Pope as he sets out on this third journey back to his homeland, to your homeland? What message do you think he can bring to the country today? What would you most like to hear or most like to say to him on this journey?
Well, I would very much hope that the Pope invites not only Catholics, but also Lutherans and all Protestants to work together in deepening the spiritual life of the Christians in a context which is very much secularized. And I also hope that the Pope, or I would suggest, that he could invite the Protestants to work together with the Catholics to open and to help each other to open the treasures of their respective traditions. I have the impression that many Christians in Germany have forgotten their traditions and how rich their traditions are. And I think it could be the unique opportunity of an ecumenical age that we open our respective traditions without understanding them in an antagonistic way, that they are not critical over against the other church, but that we help each other to find the spiritual rich traditions and to open them for the present and for the future. And if this were the invitation, let's work together for becoming more faithful Christians. I think this would be a good message that the Pope could give to Germany.
Professor Theodor Dieter, director of the Institute for Ecumenical Research in Strasbourg, France. Among those accompanying Pope Benedict on this, his third journey to his native Germany, will be the head of the Vatican's Council for Promoting Christian Unity, Swiss Cardinal Kurt Koch. He told me the visit will mark an important moment for deepening the dialogue with the Protestant world, especially in Erfurt, where the young Martin Luther studied and lived in the Augustinian monastery there.
In this journey is a visit in Erfurt and is a meeting with the representatives of the Evangelical Church in Germany. I think that this is a deepening of the ecumenical movement and to see new views in the ecumenical way.
Pope Benedict himself is, of course, has a profound understanding of this dialogue. He was very closely involved with the final draft of the document on justification. Would you say that ecumenism is one of the priorities of this visit?
Yes, I think that's a very important thing, but the issues that must be deepened is not a message in this journey, but is an office to do in Germany. The deepening, for example, the declaration of the justification is in this message is clear that is now very important to deepen the understanding of the Church.
This coming weekend, you're attending, aren't you, the St. Egidio International Meeting in Munich under the theme Bound to Live Together. Do you see this as a really important ecumenical opportunity?
For me, it's impossible only to be a little short time at Munich because I've been in Karlsruhe and then I must return because we have a course for the new bishops. I think that is a very good initiative from St. Egidio to make this in encounter with other representants of the church and representants of the Jews too.
This St. Egidio meeting comes just a month ahead of the 25th anniversary of the first World Day of Prayer for Peace in Assisi. How much do you think that spirit of Assisi continues to influence the ecumenical and interfaith movement?
First, I think that after 25 years, we have a very new situation in the world. We have the change in Europe on 89. We have the beginning of the new millennium with the terrorist attack. And then I think that the new Assisi cannot be similar to the Assisi event on 86. We have a new situation, but it's very important for the Holy Father that all churches, Christian churches and communities and all religion can proclaim that the sister of the religion is peace and not terror.
Cardinal Kurt Koch is president of the Pontifical Council for the Promotion of Christian Unity. Twenty-five years ago, Pope John Paul II made a prophetic and unprecedented gesture, inviting leaders of all the world's major religions to the Umbrian hill town of Assisi to pray for peace in the world. The invitation was accepted by around 70 religious representatives who gathered with the former pope outside the great basilica dedicated to St. Francis. That striking image and renewed spirit of dialogue has inspired ecumenical and interfaith groups around the world ever since.
25 years ago when this started, I saw some statistics. There were like four major world religions that addressed themselves to justice, peace, and ecology issues. Now there are over 2,000 religious movements that address themselves to justice, peace, and ecology.
Father Peter Damian Massengill works as an assistant to the Secretary General of the Conventual Franciscan Friars at the Basilica of the 12 Holy Apostles here in Rome, and has been involved with the organisation of events marking the 25th anniversary of that first day of prayer for peace in Assisi within the Franciscan family. While Pope Benedict will be leading a commemorative event in the city of St. Francis itself, other celebrations are expected to take place in parishes, communities and cities across the globe, recalling and recommitting all people of goodwill to that same spirit of Assisi. To find out more about the form these celebrations will take, I spoke with Father Peter Damian and with Sister Nancy Chalaski, a general counsellor of the School Sisters of St. Francis. We're looking back 25 years, the first day of prayer for peace in Assisi. What was it, do you think, back then that provoked John Paul II? What convinced him that it was necessary for such a bold, such a visible gesture as this? Father Peter.
As he put it with the announcement and with his commentary at the time in the publications, it was the figure of the person of Francis. It seemed to have an appeal to everyone around the world from all kinds of different religions, at least those of the people that came to Assisi, that there must be some inherent invitation that came out of the very person of Francis himself as a historical figure and as a spiritual figure. And so it was a place where people would come and gather, that everyone felt welcomed and at home to be who they were.
You were there, weren't you, Sister Nancy, at that first?
Yes, I was. I had just started about a year before working at L'Osservatore Romano, English edition. I went in no official capacity, took a day off from work, and went up the day before because I knew it would be pretty much difficult, impossible to get into town. And had no credentials of any kind, no invitations of any kind, but just wanted to absorb the atmosphere and be in a place which is, to me, a second home.
How would you describe that atmosphere on that day?
It was interesting, exciting. I have several visual images in mind. The first one is at the Basilica of Santa Maria degli Angeli. I was waiting outside across the street, and as the prayer ended, the Pope and all of the religious leaders who had gathered there in front of the Porzioncola And at that time, there were no big screens, so we did not see what was going on inside. We did not see that picture that has since become the image of that event. But the Pope and the other leaders all came out, and I can remember seeing the Pope's car in front of a bus. And I said, oh, there's the Pope's car. He'll get in, and everybody else will get on the bus. Well, the Holy Father took, I think it was the Archbishop of Canterbury, by the hand and climbed on the bus and sat in the seat behind the driver's seat. And I said to myself and the person who was with me, they'll never let him ride up on the bus. And there was quite a delay as everybody got on, and the Pope was just there sitting in the seat behind the driver's seat. I was on that side of the road, and he's waving to everybody, and the bus took off with him on it, and his car followed. And I thought, this is not business as usual. He was delighted. He was delighted to host this event. And just throughout the day, people were free to go where they wanted. I remember as I was at the lower basilica, as the crowds came down, and when the groups there saw the American Indians coming, it was like shock went through because they never thought of the Native Americans as a religious group. But just the panoply, but such a good feeling all around, like it was a great crowd event, and yet at times they would just ask for silence and prayer. And people went from one site to the other, praying, joining in the prayer and the silence. It was not a circus, but it was definitely an event.
There was a lot of criticism of it, even back then, wasn't there?
I was shocked. I remember the night before as I was in the piazza and there were flyers being handed out in the Piazza del Comune by groups that were totally against it, and with some rather crude cartoons of the Pope and just suggesting that it was blasphemous for him to do such a thing. So, yes, it wasn't everybody all in agreement about this. There was definitely an element that said, this is not the right thing to do, to gather people of different faiths to pray together. It's almost like putting all the faiths on the same footing.
You, of course, have been involved in interfaith work and ecumenical work to a certain extent since then, haven't you? What do you think, perhaps, is the lasting legacy of that first encounter?
I think the idea that people who do not agree on the identity of the Supreme Being can, in some way, come together, maybe not always in prayer, but at least in an attitude of respect for one another and respect for other people's ideas of who God is and God's role in our life and even how God shapes destiny. And that even if they cannot pray together, they could at least discuss together and see where there is some accord.
Father Peter Damian, you're involved to a certain extent, aren't you, in looking ahead to October, to the 25th anniversary celebrations. Tell us a bit about the original idea for this, how you became involved.
Well, originally, there was a discussion among the major superiors of the Franciscan family, the different branches of the Franciscan family, and the desire that they had to do something to commemorate the 25th anniversary of that first event. Part of that was obviously a dialogue that we had with the present leadership of the Franciscan family in Assisi, what they would like to see, how they might want to be involved. And of course, shortly after that first casual conversation, we sat down with the bishop and his counselors to discuss what might happen at Assisi. At that time, that was exactly the question, what might happen, because we had no idea how the Vatican wanted to respond to this 25th anniversary. We certainly presumed there would be something, because it's 25 years and it was a major event. But whether it was something as simple as an Angelus recognition of the event, or an audience recognition of the event, or some sort of official statement sent up for the day from the Pope or whatever. So we talked about many possibilities, and then we invited the Bishop of Assisi to write the Pope and invite him at least as a courtesy, and see how it went. And I think it was to everybody's surprise when on the 1st of January this year, he kind of, as an addenda to his Urbi et Orbi, said, oh, by the way, I'm going to Assisi on the 27th of October, which put the whole thing in a completely different level.
And I imagine has changed significantly your plans. How has that affected the organization?
Well, it's made the organization simpler because it's all in the hands of the Vatican now. But our work as Justice and Peace Coordinators continue, and it's still a very important piece. And I think the bishop felt it was a piece that convinced the Pope to come, is that our desire and our intention is to animate the recognition of that event throughout the whole world, because not everybody can come to Assisi on the 27th of October this year. But everybody can do something at home.
So you've sent a letter, haven't you, particularly through your old Franciscan family, to encouraging everybody to take part in this?
The major superiors of the family have sent a joint letter out to everyone, and the Justice and Peace Coordinators have gathered various languages together and provided a whole list of possible prayer services for groups of Franciscans, for ecumenical groups, for interfaith groups, for daily prayer, with background information of resources of what one might be able to use for these kinds of gatherings, and are asking all Franciscans in the world of every color, shape, size, and stent to do something in their local gatherings to celebrate and recognize this.
There's a lot of this material available online.
It's all online on the website. Well, there is a blog site, spiritodiocesi.wordpress.com. If that's too much to remember, there's a link on the official website of each part of the Franciscan family. It has a nice logo of Assisi there and a link to this website and to all this material. So it's readily available. And all the material is reproducible to use and shape in whatever way they wish.
If I'm not mistaken, a number of groups have had an annual event for the last 25 years, always inviting people together around the time of the anniversary to pray together, either in or to dialogue together in some kind of a format. So this is nothing new for the Franciscan family. The first year after the original event, the major superior sent a letter, and that's where we can find the first reference to the term the Spirit of Assisi, which is not, when we're using it here, it's not just, you know, what's the town there. It's the whole event that John Paul II invited everyone to come together, to pray together, to spend time in silence together, to fast together for peace. So for the last 24 years, people have been commemorating this event throughout the world. We're just trying to give it a little bit more of a push because it's a big anniversary.
My thanks there to Sister Nancy Chelaski, a general counsellor of the School Sisters of St. Francis, and Father Peter Damian Massengill, assistant to the Secretary General of the Conventual Franciscan Friars. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow if you can, or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.